Now it's time for me to introduce you to Sam Petrovich. Sam, good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning. I'm glad to be here.
And Sam just graduated from Baldwin earlier this year, class of 2023, and is in his first year at WVU and majoring in horticulture.
Yeah.
Have you always been interested in...
Oh, yeah. It's been quite a while since I was sort of first introduced to just plants in general. It was kind of funny how it started. I was probably in middle school, and I just saw this little Japanese maple seedling sprouting up in my mulch outside of the house, and I was like, wow, this is so cool. I don't know what was that perfect spark there, but it just started something that totally snowballed, and here I am now working on a major in horticulture.
That's amazing. So it was an accidental plant.
Total accident.
Did you have another Japanese maple near you?
Yeah. There was just one in the landscaping. So it must have come from there, but...
It's amazing how, I mean, it happens in forests all the time, but you don't expect it to happen. I'm assuming you're in a suburban kind of area. You don't expect it to happen there. We have, I mentioned it a couple weeks ago, it looks like a cornstalk, just in the middle of our yard, city-type lot, and it's like, but we didn't plant it. Where did this come from? And... they have these great, a Google image search is a wonderful thing.
Yes.
And my wife took a picture of it, and it's millet. And we think bird seed, because we feed the birds a lot, germinated and might have be
started growing from there.
Yeah, might be the responsible party, but... because we have no grass in our yard by choice and kind of this meadow, it's there.
Right. It's amazing to see what can just pop up.
Yeah, it's there and ready to go. So did you pretty much know that you wanted to major in horticulture early on?
Essentially. So I was also sort of interested in like biochemistry, chemistry in general, things like that. But I decided on horticulture since I knew that West Virginia already had such a great horticulture program. If I went to a different school, I would have pursued that. But
That's excellent that you're doing it. What do you take in a freshman year horticulture class? I can't even imagine what the curriculum is.
So at the moment, it's mostly general education type stuff. So English, math, things like that.
Getting all that stuff out of the way.
But I have one class, though, that's actually related to my degree at the moment, and that's called Plants and People. So
I know it should be obvious, but... and I also know you're probably a week into it, but is it about, I guess, what is it about? I can think of so many ways it could go.
Yeah. So, of course, people have been using plants for how many thousands of years now? One thing that we've really just started talking about in depth is the beginning of agriculture. So how people first started using plants to sustain themselves, to create settlements, anything along those lines. And of course, that can continue on. I think we're going to do units on medicinal plants, how they work themselves into everyday lives, things like that.
It's fascinating. There's a lot. Well, it's rare that I have somebody I can ask this question of. I gather, at least from what I read in the news, a lot of plants seem to be becoming intellectual property. That companies or individuals are patenting certain variations.
Right.
Even to the point where if you get an accidental, like the Japanese maple you just described, and if that accidental – is that the right term, accidental?
I think so.
If that comes from a seed that is subject to those restrictions, that it could be an issue. Is that becoming a more and more of a issue and concern, the whole idea of who owns nature,
I think it is starting to become a little bit of an issue, at least for, household gardeners. Nothing's going to happen.
Oh, true.
But, larger scale companies, it becomes a problem. I think it's mainly an issue with, farmers, because they're not allowed to harvest the seeds from their crops if it's a given variety that's patented, and then they're not allowed to use those seeds and plant them again the next year. They have to rebuy all of their seeds each year, because that would violate the copyright.
That's huge. So if you're accustomed, I would imagine it's a practice for certain crops to use the seeds again, and you're prohibited from doing that. You are supposed to buy those seeds instead. It doesn't seem fair at all. In fact, it seems counter.
It does. It's very counterproductive, it seems, especially, if the idea is to, grow food for people, or something that's, equally important. It just doesn't quite seem fair to copyright that and make money off of it when you could be feeding people.
But yeah, I could see if you were forbidden from harvesting the seeds and selling them to somebody else. Interesting. Well, we'll talk more and also talk about the EcoLeader Academy, but let's meet Leah Keene, who is also here. She's a senior at Mount Lebanon High School. Hey, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Good. Tell me a bit about yourself, what you like to do.
Yeah, okay. I just started my senior year at Mount Lebanon High School, and I don't know, outside of school, I do a lot of reading. I'm in nature a lot. I like hiking. I do synchronized swimming, which I think is pretty interesting. I don't meet a lot of other people who do that.
No, I don't know many people that do that either. Is there a team in Mount Lebanon, or is this a non-school?
It's just a club team. It's Pittsburgh Artistic Swimming, and I've just something I've been doing for a while and I'm really passionate about.
What got you into that?
That's a great question, actually. I've always felt like the most myself when I'm in the water, and so I've been doing swimming for a really long time, and I grew up in the Forest Hills, Braddock area, and there just happened to be a team there, and so my mom signed me up, and I was just kind of, there's little 4 or 5 year old Leah swimming around.
I think I remember it because I grew up near there, and I think there's a long tradition in that area.
Yeah, it's been there for 50 or so years. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. You mentioned enjoying nature and hiking. Tell me more about that. What is it that enchants you about being out in nature?
So many things. I think something that I really find beautiful about the forest specifically, because that's where I do a lot of hiking, because there's just so many great forests in the Pittsburgh area and just Western Pennsylvania in general. It's just how different it looks every time you go into it. It really feels the world's made anew every morning. And it's just so cool. You get to see so many different things. And as part of sort of what drew me to the EcoLeader stuff, just that interesting connection between humans and our built and natural environment.
Any particular hiking areas that you enjoy around here?
Oh, that's a really tough question. I love the Rachel Carson Trail. They have a trail challenge that you can do every year around May or June, and there's different groupings of distances, and you can do either with family and friends or by yourself, and you just go you hike a set distance, and you try to, it's a little competition, and that's really enjoyable.
Sounds nice. Let me ask both of you, if you have anybody you want to acknowledge or say hello to, you may or may not. I just want to be sure I ask you that. Say of anybody.
Nobody in particular. I'll just say hi to everyone.
There you go.
Yeah.
Leah?
Yeah, I can't think of anyone.
Okay. So you're never too old for a shout out. I just wanted to be sure I gave you that chance. So let's talk about Phipps Conservatory's EcoLeader Academy and how it all went. Sam, do you want to start and sort of explain the experience? And may both of you attended some of the same things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
Then, but did you have a project that would be different We'll find out, I guess. But I'll let the two of you, like, how did it start and kind of run us through it?
Do you want to go? Like, how did you get into it, Sam?
So I am a member of this sort of environmental committee. It's based in Whitehall. It's called the WCEA. And I don't know what exactly you want to call it, but whoever it is that's in charge actually pointed out the program to me. And I was like, oh, this is perfect for me. This is right up my alley. You know, this is absolutely something I would love to do. And it started from there. What about you?
My AP bio teacher, actually, she knows that I have a membership at FIPS because I'm there like every week. And she pulled me out of like out of class one day. She's like, Leah, I just saw this thing. You have to do it. And so I was like, of course. And I signed up because it sounded so fascinating.
It did.
Did you have something? Well, should we describe like what exactly we did for the Eco Leader Academy? I mean, we met with various people involved in like environmental science and just different aspects of, I guess, like the FIPS community specifically. Mm-hmm. And we learned a lot about things like environmental justice, sustainable landscaping and architecture.
I would say that just about every single week that we went, there was a new environmental related topic that we were able to discuss. There was one week we did like pollution, water pollution, air pollution, things like that. There was another week we did a lot with environmental justice, which I thought was a very, very important topic to mention. We got tours of the gardens, of the conservatory, got a little behind-the-scenes peek at the production greenhouses, which was pretty interesting to see. I think bottom line is that it was all about just all these different environmental topics.
Yeah, and it was a super hands-on experience, too. I mean, I'm thinking about, like, the bio-art unit that we did, just using, like, recycled materials and stuff. And it was really fascinating. We were always doing something, and we were always very involved with the community at FIPS.
Tell me more about what you learned about environmental justice.
Okay. So I think it's something that a lot of people are probably aware of, but they just don't have the correct term to describe it by. I think a lot of people realize that typically you'll see factories and really big industries around places that are, you know, less financially fortunate, per se, or even in minority group areas, which is such a shame. In higher wealth areas, you'll see, you know, more parks, things like that. And I think that would be like the main idea of environmental justice, is that we're putting all of these things, all of these negative environmental influencers in places that really can't sustain it. So I'd say that's what the biggest part of environmental justice is. But if you have anything to add.
No, yeah, there were two, I think, main aspects that we touched on. What Sam was saying, more of like at a community or local level, and then also like policy-wise, so thinking about sort of those more like companies or factories and thinking about the lawyers that they maybe have on retainer to help them deal with sort of environmental issues that arise, basically like a system of checks and balances for companies and factories. But then I think we focused the most on sort of it as like a community issue. So like in Pittsburgh, for example, like all of the like steel mills and things, so they're no longer nearly as operational as they were. They're located in areas that are generally, there's a disparity in the income levels and like the areas that a lot of the industry is located in versus the area that, say, benefits more from that industry. And we were talking about the epidemiological effects, so more like how like asthma is really high in various parts of the cities where there's like lots of air pollution from the industry that we put there. And then we talked too about how it's sort of like a slippery slope. What was the either there was like a card game and we did it was like homeowners versus like city people. We were just really looking at, it's a very intersectional issue and a very, very complicated one too. So what we were sort of trying to do was start to untangle it a little bit. And it was really interesting. I think it gave us some really fascinating and invaluable answers.
What was the card game? Do you remember?
I will do my best. It's been a little while, so I'm not sure if I remember it totally, but we'll see. We'll see what I can come up with. So basically, you were dealt a totally random card. And depending on if your card had an even number on it or an odd number, you would split up. And if...
And then like the sweets too. So if there's like hearts or diamonds or clubs or whatever, you were also divided.
And so you played, you had different roles or attitudes depending on the cards you were dealt?
Yeah, kind of. And it was also, I don't remember the exact name of the person, but she was a professor at Pitt that came and conducted the thing.
Yes.
And so she had a split up. If you had an even numbered card, you were in the first group. And if you had an odd numbered one, you were in the second one. So we were divided from that. And then she would call out sort of various prompts. Like if you have, if your card's number is above six or and you like have an ace or whatever, something like that. She's like, you're a homeowner, so you can vote on this specific issue. And like, so it was more like that, creating these like, these sort of randomized identities that show you when, that seem, I guess, sort of divorced from the concept of like the environment in isolation, but when you put it together with the idea of like policy and stuff, it showed you how big of an issue this is.
It makes total sense. So a group of homeowners perhaps have more say and sway because of the way taxation works, and a group of people renting might not have as much say.
Exactly.
For example, that's very interesting in terms of opening up your mind to these issues.
I think the prompt specifically was, it was like we were voting on whether or not a power plant should be put in this.
Yeah.
I think it was in the low income area. That's what we were talking about. That's why the concept of the homeowners were mentioned. He's like, oh, you can only vote if you're in the homeowners association of this specific area. So something like that. That probably would have been a little bit more helpful to preface
that's but, really interesting. And then you think of money that's used to sway people to vote one way or another, and how that works, and it affects ecology and the environment. So were there projects? You mentioned hands-on activities. I seem to remember there's a culminating project. I am guessing they might have been different. Can you talk about this?
You should. Do you want to talk about yours first?
Sure. Okay. So just to give everyone an idea of exactly what the project was, essentially everybody would sort of collect into a group of maybe four or so, maybe three, and sort of make this culminating project having to do with the environment, essentially. So what I did with my group was create a very small, very cheap hydroponic garden. So we were trying to show that it's really easy to create just a little garden that you could keep in your windowsill. So I think we used maybe a pencil box, like a plastic pencil box, and cut out the top and used rock wool. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that.
I am not.
Okay, so that's basically like rock fibers sort of pressed into a material that you can grow plants in.
Oh, I know what that – now I know what it florists use that.
It's used a lot in Phipps's hydroponic gardens. That's how we sort of found out about it because we got a tour there.
Yeah, and so from there we planted some little microgreens inside of the rock wool and placed a light above that, and they started growing.
What makes something hydroponic?
I'm going to do my best here.
Okay.
I think, at least to me, what it seems like is just growing plants inside of water, that there is no soil present.
Ah, okay. Yeah. So rock wool does not disqualify that from being hydroponic. I didn't know that, but I never thought much about it.
Usually you use a very small piece of rock wool, and that's just to be able to keep the plant in the right place in the garden.
It's mostly that the water is treated with things like phosphorus and nitrogen, and then it's like correctly it has like a correctly balanced pH or things like that, and then it's sort of using the water rather than like the soil. It's mostly to save space. You can more efficiently grow healthy vegetables.
So I've seen, in fact, a school I work a lot with has, I think these things are available. It's like a plastic, almost a tree looking structure, but it has places to put plants.
Yeah.
And I think they're hydroponic the way it's done.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
That sounds so cool.
I'll show you a picture of it.
I'd love to see it.
I think those things exist. So you basically from scratch created this hydroponic.
Yes.
Very, very cool.
It was really impressive, actually. I remember seeing it on the summit, and I was absolutely taken aback because our tables were right next to each other, and I was like, wow, competition.
So what did you do, Leah?
So my group, we called ourselves Trash Can, and what we did was we were looking at pollution.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, you clever. Can you see? It's pretty clever, yeah. So what we did, we were all really interested in endangered marine life, especially with like global warming and just I guess increased industrialization. We see a lot of waste in the oceans, and just a lot of general harm is coming to our oceans, and that's something that we should all care about, because you know, without the oceans we wouldn't be here. But I digress. We were all really interested in marine life, like me, everyone in my group, and so we sort of had the idea to take some of the things, some pieces of trash or whatever that typically harm animals in their natural environment, and use it to turn it into a work of art. So what we did was we made a gallery, and we had several little boxes, I guess, and in each of those we had built like a pseudo paper mache type animal in their environment, and everything was made entirely of recycled or reused materials.
Very cool and very memorable for people to see. I can't believe how quickly this has gone. We only have a couple minutes left. First, is there anything either of you would like to say that you haven't had a chance to say?
I'll think of it later whenever I'm back at home.
The thing I can think of is that I'm just really grateful that I got this opportunity.
Yes, absolutely.
It was fascinating, and it was really something I looked forward to every week. Going
go out in nature. Enjoy the greenery.
Now, we know Sam is likely to be a horticulture major at WVU. I didn't mean to say it's not going to happen, but that's your intentions.
Yes.
Do you know what you want to do?
Yeah, I want to do biomedical engineering. So not really, it's a little divorced from environmental science, it seems, at first glance. But I'm really interested in neurodegenerative diseases. I want to study Alzheimer's. That's what I'm really interested in, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And I think there are environmental aspects in everything you do. Here's one more question, which is much broader. If I gave you a magic wand to choose one thing of many that you could change, and it need not be related to the environment, it could be, and it need not be the only thing, but just one that might come to mind. It could be local, global, whatever. Do you have any idea what you would change?
This is a loaded question.
Yes,
wow.
It is.
Give me a second. I have to think.
Wow. It's almost like any answer, as good as it might be, is still the wrong one.
Nah. It's just sort of what comes to mind first. Because people will be curious, I think.
Yeah. I don't know. Lantern flies have been on my on my nerves
there
lately.
There you go. That's perfect. I feel bad. I don't like to kill things.
Yeah, I know. I feel awful about it, but they're just as bad.
Yeah.
Ooh. On a less selfless note, I think if I could change anything immediately, I'd like to not be lactose intolerant.
There you go.
Yeah.
Why not?
I'd like to eat ice cream.
Very practical. Actually, you can take pills, but that's gotta be frustrating.
It's just a little bit, like if I forget them. But on like a more global scale, as something with like the oceans or something, like coral bleaching is what I'm interested in. But also lactose intolerance.
I love ice cream. I love ice cream. But I was with a friend the other day who had to take a pill before having ice cream, and I was thinking, man, that would be a bummer. I'm so glad both of you could be here with us today.
Oh, yeah, it's been great.
This was an honor. Thank you.
Please keep in touch, and we'll have you back again to see how things are going.